Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score! Mully and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago Sports Talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
It's interesting when you hear Ryan Pace asked about Mitchell Trubisky, and he says,
the draft's not an exact science. We know that. And, you know, I think there's so many variables involved in this.
And he says,
we're the different staff now. Again, I think we're very connected to our coaches on what we're looking for.
There is an implication, whether he means that to be expressed or not, that the decision to take Mitch Trubisky was not his, or was done in harmony with others that didn't know what they were doing, and that he's learned from his experience, and now he's got people that know exactly what they're looking for at the quarterback position, so he's going to do a better job of getting them the guy they can win with. He's not taking a hell of a lot of responsibility on the decision to move up and to bring in Trubisky, who failed. Did he fail or did they fail him? We can argue about that all day. It was a failure on several levels if you really pick it apart.
When you don't own it, when he talked around that question, and was a very good one from Dion Miller at the time.
Yes.
Then everything else that comes out of his mouth seems disingenuous. That's not the kind of accountability that you're hoping to hear from the general manager of your team as you move into a draft that is so pivotal and has all these questions that are looming about moving up and getting the right guy with conviction. You'd like to see some evidence that he has learned from these mistakes, and namely the Trubisky error. What happened with Mitch Trubisky is not defensible. So own it. Own it. Admit it. And move on and tell us why and tell us how you've learned.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Okay, let's go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Here we go, David. Draft week continues. The latest news is that the team with the third pick in the draft doesn't know what to do with it. Isn't sure which quarterback to take. They traded up for it. Oh, there's all sorts of wonderful things yet to be uncovered. Good morning, Dave.
Morning, Mike. Happy Tuesday. How you doing?
Yeah. I live the dream.
Yeah. The draft 48 hours away, getting closer and closer. I'm just glad the full moon was last night and not Thursday night, so crazy things can be avoided, maybe.
But was last that night the pink was... moon? Pink moon? Yeah. Is that what it was called?
It was a thing of beauty. It was.
I forgot to go out and look at it.
Oh, it definitely was worth going outside and spend a little time outdoors if you could. Maybe take the garbage out, maybe take a walk down the block. It was something to see. It was a little crazy.
Yeah, I take the garbage out and just hang out in the alley. I got
exactly.
It. You pretty much described my childhood.
It was cool, though, and crazy night to watch sports. You know, Cubs. That turned into somewhat of a softball game. Slugfest. Wow. And Cubs aren't in the same sentence enough this year, but that was a slugfest. And the Bulls surprised, I think, many of us, or at least they surprised me by pulling out a victory down in Miami. I had sort of written them off. But no, Daniel Tice says, we're still here.
Well, I mean, the good news for the Bulls is somehow Washington ended their 8-game winning streak. That's been kind of a problem for those that are actually following it. The Bulls desperately trying to cling to that 10th playoff spot, and they were passed up by Washington. Washington had won 8 in a row, and I know it's more about the Bulls than Washington, but 8 in a row at this time of year is a difficult one to overcome when your best player's out. So I was delighted to see them lose and the Bulls win, and now they're ever closer to crawling back into the 10 hole.
That's where we are as Bulls observers, watching the scoreboard, waiting for teams like the Raptors and the Wizards at the 10th spot to lose. Scoreboard watching for the play-in opportunity to get ousted, to be the first team eliminated. That's kind of where we have become. And a lot of good candor. We'll get into it later, but a lot of excellent candor from Thaddeus Young once again, kind of reminding people of what the stakes are and what the expectations were after the trade and what really has happened and how disappointing it is to watch this unfold.
Yeah, I agree. They played perimeter defense, David. That was the difference from the last time they played the Heat to this time. And they just lost to the Heat, and they get another shot at it, and they go down there and win the game. So that's pretty good. Now they're at the Knicks on Wednesday, and we know that the Knicks are playing well because we know that Tibbs coaches every game like it's a playoff game. So you know you're gonna get top effort from that team, and you're going to have to be ready to match that intensity and to match that defensive effort. So it should be fun to see if the Bulls can do it, if they're up for it. And they need to stack some wins here as the season winds down because, again, Zach LaVine's still out. He's missed his 7th straight game. We're not sure that he's going to be back before the end of the season, but important to get to the playoffs nonetheless. So they're still alive. That's good news.
Yeah, you heard May 3rd to the end of the year. It's hard to know what to expect with Zach LaVine. So
yep.
Bulls need to stack some victories. Won't be easy against Tom Thibodeau and Derrick Rose. That Knicks team has taken off since they made the trade for Rose. I know they lost last night to end their 9-game win streak. But they have been hot. They've been playing well. It's a combination of Thibodeau and Rose and Taj Gibson. It feels like it's 2011 all over again. That will be fun to watch because the Bulls have to win, and the Knicks have been playing really pretty much familiar basketball. When you have a Tom Thibodeau coach team, you know what you're going to get. And the Knicks have been one of the biggest surprises, I think, in the Eastern Conference.
Lucas Giolito will start today against Detroit. The White Sox were off on Monday. They swept Texas when last we watched them, and they are 12-9, 2 games behind the Royals. Not that we're looking at the – it's only 21 games in. We're not getting crazy. We're not standings watching or anything like that. But it'd be nice to beat up on the Tigers, and here's hoping – that the bats come alive and that the pitching is as good as it's been, the starting pitching. You mentioned the Cubs. They just started this series in Atlanta. I thought we had decided that the Braves weren't going to score any runs anymore. I thought that was made clear during the doubleheader when they failed to score. So what the heck are the Braves doing? Boom goes the dynamite for Chris Bryant. That was obviously a highlight to see a grand slam, and the Cubs get back in a game that started oh so poorly for Zach Davies.
And it was just as fun to see Chris Bryant show some emotion around the bases after, you know, in his pregame Zoom conference, I think he talked about Fernando Tatis Jr. and how, you know, you'll never see him kind of reacting like that only because it's not his personality so much, but he couldn't really suppress the smile round and second, and it was fun. And it was a great at-bat because he looked ticked off after a low strike was called, and it was out of the zone. And then he comes back with the bases loaded, hits a homer to left, and you look at his numbers, Mully, and he has done everything within his power to get off to a good start. It's just – at different times, you know, the lineup is either inconsistent offensively or they're not getting a performance at the mound, and that was the case last night.
Are we surprised that David Ross didn't run out and get thrown out if there was a ball, a strike out of the zone called?
You know, they alluded to that, though. I think it was during the telecast. It was like, well, this is one of those games somebody might get thrown out. Is that where we are now, where, like, they start to get a bad call? There are bad calls every game. Every umpire, every pitcher, every game.
Every strike counts. It all matters. You understand?
Right.
Okay. I believe that's one of the things that Rossi said. It's just a pity that you lose that game, frankly, with that comeback from the huge hole that you were in the first inning. And, you know, we do have a Zach Davies dilemma. We do. We've got to discuss it and talk about it. You know, if we're going to move Dylan Cease out of the lineup on the south side, what the heck are we going to do with Zach Davies? Good God.
So you want equal time in terms of bashing. If you're going to bash one right-hander, you're going to bash the other.
I'm not bashing. This is the opposite than what the White Sox are going through because, you know, this is a guy you really are relying upon, you really need. This is not your fifth starter, and it's just a really rough start to the season and one that doesn't fall in place with what you saw in spring training, but I guess that's –
Yeah,
story.
What you're saying is that the Darvish trade isn't going so well right now.
Is well, they got the lottery tickets.
There's that's right. Okay.
Yeah.
Those teenagers, those crazy teenagers.
Right. Oh, gosh. I've got a house full of them. It's just hoping that someday I can scratch and woohoo. But who knows? That's just how it works. So Ryan Pace is speaking today at 9 a.m., David,
Sharp.
As you well know, I am wondering, do we do crosstalk? Do we jump off and get on the Zoom call with Ryan Pace?
Boy.
How do we handle, how do you and I
That's
handle
tough.
A Bears Zoom conference where, you know, I mean, we obviously prefer to talk to our friends.
Of course.
The problem is, what is Ryan Pace going to say? I mean, won't he reveal pretty much the draft plan? Don't we need to be there for that?
I won't know what to have for breakfast if I don't talk to Dan Bernstein during transition. And I won't know what the Bears are going to do Thursday night if we don't hear from Ryan Pace. I'm very, very conflicted right now.
Yeah.
And I know you are too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not an orange juice guy. So he's not going to call me off. But,
exactly.
Yeah. But I do not understand exactly how to handle this Ryan Pace Zoom call. There's part of me that just wants to hear the answers because I know he's not going to say anything, right? He's going to basically give will he at some point say, guys, this is sensitive? Like, he will explain that why he can't talk. I only talk at times when I can't say anything.
I wanted to have a question, like just so you could pull out the Ryan Pace voice. So that's good that you did it already, and it's only 5:11. So I want to hear that again. And I do think it's important to hear. It's almost like you know that you're not going to get anything of substance, right? But it's almost like, we watch these shows all the time, and hopefully you never have to go through this, but during depositions, you get asked questions or you ask questions that you already know the answers to. Could you state your name for the record? Could you state your intention? Yeah, you know, all these things are for the record. I kind of want to see how he handles the record.
Yes.
That's just part of it, right?
I hope you guys can respect this time of year.
Yeah.
He's going to say that.
He's bound to say it. But I do think it's fair game to ask him flat out, who do you believe won the election? Do you believe the election was rigged? Oh, no, wait a minute. That's the wrong set of questions. I do believe it's fair game to ask him, why should you be trusted to pick a quarterback given the history of the position under your administration?
I don't disagree with that, Mully, and I think that is the essential question about this entire draft. But we both know that if you ask somebody, even Ryan Pace, as guarded as we know he will be, and even if the most candid of interview subjects would be on the other end of that question, 2 days before the draft, you're not going to get a real introspective answer, right?
Probably not. You just said get him on the record. I think Potsy would ask that question.
I think you're probably right. Yeah, I think that's true. I'm not saying it's an unfair question. I'm very curious, but I think there are times where you know what direction you're going to be taken, and some other times you're surprised. But that is the essential question, I think, for him, you know, whether it's January 4th or whenever they met the media after the season, right. They knew they were going to need a quarterback, or this morning at 9:02 when he gets done, introducing himself.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see exactly what he says and what people want on the record for this particular time. I do think, David, that it's a fair question to ask that. It's a fair question to say to him, hey, are you allowed to get on your horse in this draft and move up to any spot for any player? Is your I found a guy philosophy supported by the team here?
Right. That's a good way to put it. I guess I would be as interested in knowing how asking him what makes him qualified to pick another quarterback might put him on the defensive, and you might get a good response.
Right.
I guess I'd be more curious or as curious to know, do you understand why people question your credentials when selecting or evaluating the quarterbacks in this draft, given your track record, which is spotty at best?
I think you can ask that question without throwing in spotty at best.
Oh, I know you could. That was for the audience. That wasn't for the question.
Okay.
The subject. If you want to really like alienate your subject,
exactly.
That's when you throw in these leading terms.
Yes.
But if you really just want to have a conversation and like, you know, let's keep this professional, then spotty at best would be best left unsaid.
Ryan, have you stopped drafting quarterbacks?
Yeah.
All right. We can have a lot of fun with it if we want.
I would describe it as fluid.
There you go. All right. We got to get to the 5 at 5. There's so much to talk about, and we got some fun questions for you. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
What should the Cubs do about Zach Davies in the starting rotation? Is it time to dump Davies for Alec Mills, who's the all-purpose guy in the bullpen? Would that be the answer, or just weakening two spots?
Well, we've done it. Now we've asked the question. Now all of the Dylan C-SPANs out there can breathe a heavy sigh of relief. It's not just the South Side. And, you know, the interesting thing is the Dylan C's question is really born more of a guy that's better than him moving into the starting lineup than this would be. I think you gotta figure out why Zach Davies is not ready to open games and why there are problems from Jump Street. And I think you've got to address them. You need him. You don't, you know, Alec Mills is a break in case of emergency. Are we already in the emergency phase with a guy that you thought was going to be maybe your second best starter? That's not good. That's no gouda. So I think you need to figure out, you know, they got a pitching lab. Can we get some guys with, you know, test tubes and Bunsen burners and, you know, doing all their little magic, come out in your white coats and fix this guy? You need him to be the player that you thought he was when he was thrown into that trade. So I don't think the answer is to go to Alec Mills. You want to skip him one time in the rotation, I got no problem with that. But I think he's too important a piece to have as a starting pitcher to kind of give up on it now. So this is a veteran guy. This is not a young guy. This is a guy that's been through, he says it's the worst stretch he's gone through in his career. If you want to have a pause with him and let him work on something, I got no problem with that. But before all is said and done, you need him as a starter on this team.
Yeah, go to the pitch lab and take the statistics for the first, or the box scores for the first few starts for Zach Davies and you know, destroy them on a Bunsen burner, have a ceremony. You know, it's like, okay, this is not good enough. This stinks. Start over. Here's the difference between the White Sox and the Cubs in terms of, you mentioned Cease, is that everything is about expectations in sports. You know, the Cubs went into the season, whether people wanted to admit it or not, with limited ambition. And I think the offseason reflected that. And nobody will ever admit that. And that's our observation or my observation. But when you have limited ambition, you have to have kind of a deeper supply of patience. And you're not approaching it with as much urgency as you typically might. So when you have Zach Davies, the main guy, the main major leaguer in the Yu Darvish trade, you've got to give him every opportunity to fail, if you will. And he's taken advantage of those opportunities to fail, unfortunately, because he stinks. He's got a 9.47 ERA. His walk rate is higher than his strikeout rate, 15% to 14%. He's not gone into he can't get into the fifth inning. That's a minimum for a veteran with his experience. But to remove him from the rotation now only creates two problems. Number one, how do you replace Alec Mills, the man replacing him? Because Millsy has not necessarily been your most valuable pitcher, but he has been your most versatile. And that is something that matters when you're looking at how limited the Cubs' bullpen is. So you don't want to do that. And if you put him in the rotation, the idea is now you'd only have him once every fifth day. He probably deserves that. And, you know, after talking to him on Saturday on Inside the Clubhouse, we know that he still wants that, but I don't think it's time. I don't think it's time for them to take Zach Davies out of the rotation. I think maybe you have to figure out what he's doing wrong to try to fix it. He has been fixed before, so it hasn't been quite this bad, as he pointed out. But you do have to have a little bit more patience, because this is the kind of team, unfortunately, that you were committed to being this year.
Is Liam Hendricks' tarot card reader available to help out with the Zach Davies situation? Could he seems right. He's ready for a session, if you know what
Dustin,
I mean.
Dustin, welcome back. But is it really a good week for her to advertise? I mean, Hendricks is exactly lighting it up.
Well, if Zach Davies was even in the same church as Liam Hendricks, I'd be okay with that. I never thought I'd miss Yu Darvish this soon. I didn't think that he was going to be Yu Darvish. I didn't think he would be better than Yu Darvish, but I didn't think I would miss Yu Darvish this quickly. He's been really, really, really bad. And you're right, David. If you did put Mills in the Zach Davies spot, it does create a problem with the bullpen, because the bullpen also has not been exactly the Cubs' strong suit, and they made a ton of moves yesterday. Guys up, guys down, guys on the 60, guys on the 12. They got a problem, and you're both right. That they need a pitching lab situation. You know, next week we'll talk to our guy Tommy Hotovy again. We'll see where he's at in the equation. We have to maybe look at the schedule. Is there a situation coming up where they might have the opportunity to go to a four-man? Is that in the future? Could they skip a start? Or could you get away with this, David and Mike? Could you skip the start once and see what it's like with Alec Mills in the rotation and maybe Zach in the Alec Mills role just for one time around? Not commit to it, but just see if that might work. So this is a big issue for the Cubs. I'm not sure it's the top of the issues for the Cubs, but it's definitely in the top three.
Let me ask you a question.
Lucas Giolito will start tonight after being pushed back due to cutting his finger on a bottle he thought was a twist-off. Garrett Crochet was obviously bleeding on the mound Sunday as he pitched. Are the White Sox pitchers injury-prone or just going through an unlucky phase? Any concerns about carelessness? What do you expect out of Giolito?
What is going on with these injuries and all the blood shed among the White Sox pitching staff? Hide the Perrier. I mean, Lucas Giolito cutting his finger, that was the oddest excuse and reason. I'm not saying it's an excuse, but the oddest reason for him missing a start. You start to wonder and worry what's going on here. But hopefully he will be okay. The Crochet thing was a little bit odd, too. He has had, just as a quick aside, hasn't he had the strangest year so far? I mean, and I'm not really talking about his stuff. His stuff remains filthy, as the kids say. And he is a guy that you're going to rely upon, clearly, just because of the way that he throws. But he has trouble fielding his position. He has trouble. Now he was bleeding the other day. It just seems like he has one odd thing after another crop up that we end up talking about more than his pitching. Giolito, that was strange. But if he's fine to go on the mound and we'll take him at what he says, that's good. That's positive. The Tigers should be a very good team for him to face coming off this kind of setback. I don't know if it's a setback yet. Not if he struggles tonight, it's a setback. But right now it's just a delay in his start. It gave him an opportunity to start Michael Kopech. We'll get to him later. But I expect Lucas Giolito to look like the ace of the staff. And that means against the Tigers, you know, go 6 or 7. Be difficult to hit. Strike out double digits. And stay away from the bottled water with the cap, you know, because these things are dangerous.
Well, let's start with the Garrett Crochet thing. Did MLB take the baseball for fear a foreign substance was on it? Is it possible that instead of Vaseline or spit, one could use one own's blood order to? Oh boy. I got to tell you, and I'm just going to say this, and you can call me an idiot, and we can get into an argument about it. But that happened to me once. I cut a finger on a bottle. It was a beer bottle. I thought it was a twist-off beer bottle, and it wasn't a twist-off. And I did actually have a slight cut on my forefinger because that's how I opened it. I don't know how you get to the middle finger, but I don't know how many people make that mistake with water bottles. And you know what I learned is, you need a bottle opener. And I'm talking about a human being that comes with you and tests all those bottles.
An opener, so, like in baseball. Yeah, you have your openers.
That opens it. Yeah. So that would be my advice to Lucas. But I wonder if it was a beer bottle. I can't help him.
Did you miss deadline that night because you couldn't type because of the scar on your middle finger? If it was your middle finger, don't show me, please.
Yeah, you know I'm a tough guy. So I had a paper cut once that was so severe that I missed almost a week of work. That's not true. No, but I mean, I compared to some of the football players you cover, we used to joke about that. Like, I remember it was Mark Bortz, Dustin's hero, who had his fingers moving in like 6 different directions one time after a game down in New Orleans. And I looked at it and I was like, oh my God. And I said, what are you going to do? And he looked at me and he was like, fingers don't count in football. And I thought, like, well, they're coming awful handy typing, sir. So don't write your, you know, get a ghostwriter. And Dustin would volunteer for that. He's already written more books than any of us. I got to tell you, I think that when I think about this kind of unlucky stuff that's happened, none of it is overly serious, right? I mean, it's like Baez running down to first and diving for no one should ever dive for first base. You too, your mean Mercedes, knock that off. But that's how he hurt his hammy, apparently. In a game where no one got on base, he somehow hurt his hammy. Think about it. So he missed yesterday's game, supposedly, for that reason. But I think that the White Sox are not injury prone. I think that weird stuff just happens. This is not a Jose Cardenal situation.
Yeah, I think unlucky is the term that would fit best in this situation. But listen, all eyes will be and should be on Lucas tonight. You need to see how that's going to go. I mean, is it that liquid skin they put on? Will it stay on? Does he pitch with a bandage on the thing? These are all things that we will definitely have to watch. Now you could say, well, they're facing the Tigers. They should be able. The other thing that will be interesting is how long will they let Lucas go? With the bullpen, and they've had days off recently, right? They shouldn't have to overtax him and create a further issue on that finger. But now some people, I think we've all heard, if you overwork a cut or a blister, it can actually harden sometimes. So I think there's kind of that magic spot where it's something to keep an eye on, no doubt about it. But I don't think this is something to be concerned about from that the Sox are injury prone. It's a couple of bad instances, and thankfully
cursed.
Bud Light's a twist cursed. Off always, so I never have an issue with ripping my finger on a beer bottle. So it's always a twist off for a Bud Light.
It's a tough one, Bruce. It's a very fair question and obviously a ripe one.
Do you like the fact the White Sox seem to be taking the long view on Michael Kopech? Is the greater need for this team in the bullpen or at starting pitcher? If Kopech develops according to plan, could he wind up as a starter considerable later in the season or in a considerably more important time?
That would be the ideal, wouldn't it? I mean, this is not about – I think we're looking at this season and we're seeing, oh, look how good he is. Get him in the starting rotation and see how that goes. I'm telling you, he's going to be a great starter. I think you do that next year. I've been thinking about it a lot because he looks so good. But if you can use him in the bullpen, he's great coming out of the bullpen. And he can pitch his three innings and he can go a little bit longer if need be. And you can use him a couple of times. I think it's a question of how you want to use him. I think he's that good that if you want to use him all the time, you could do that. But I think keep him stretched a little bit. And then who knows? By the time you get to the end of the year, is it conceivable that he's one of the guys you would want starting in the playoffs? Because this is all about the playoffs and what happens when you get there. And in fact, I thought, you know, we just complained about Crochet, and I know he can't field his position great. But what about that combination? What about Kopech coming out for five innings, then Crochet pitches three against some playoff team? Would that not be a hell of a lot better than what happened in the third game last year? Wouldn't you love to see Michael Kopech eat up five innings in a playoff situation and then Crochet finish it up and then you could go to Liam Hendricks and only give up the one home run? I think it's a plan, and I like it, and I'm all on board with making sure that you preserve these arms for when it matters most. And I think that's the long-term view. I mean, obviously you'd think about next year and the year after and these guys in a starting rotation. But for this season, with this team, you're looking at the playoffs. You're actually gearing up for that, and you're trying to make sure you preserve these arms for it.
It really is hard to contain that kind of enthusiasm for Michael Kopech and not allow that to cloud your judgment when you're determining what is the best course for him this season. But after the show yesterday, I was thinking about it some more too, and Stoney was great. And I think that, you know, I was guilty of that probably right after seeing him do what he did on Sunday. He's so impressive, and his talent is so special that you just want to see it on a consistent basis. And you want to see it, you know, in the traditional sense of every fifth day as a starter in that rotation. And yet, I don't know that it's time to do that yet. I think Stoney alluded to this, but then, and the more you do the math, I think I said yesterday, well, you got 85 to 90 pitches a week. Well, wouldn't you want to do that in a start? Well, maybe that's too many, possibly. He may need to be handled differently, because if you do the math and you look at the innings, he may be out of gas by mid-August, and that's when you want him to start getting real tuned up and ready for the stretch run. You need Michael Kopech in September and October to make you different. I think that almost the more you see of him, the glimpses that you see, the more you understand that. That's the prize, not now. I mean, you can't win a pennant in April or May, but you can lose it. We've heard that from Stoney every year, and it's true. But I do think with Michael Kopech, given his history, you do have to tap the brakes. You do have to take deep breaths. You have to remind yourself constantly that as excited as you are watching him do this in April, imagine how dangerous he will be and how special it would be to see him do that in October. Mully, I think he would start a playoff game, but I want more than five innings if he's at that point. You want him to go as deep as possible to turn the game over to a bullpen who by then has reestablished itself as one of the best in baseball. The idea of him handing the ball to Crochet is scary for opponents. So whatever it is that you need to do, and maybe they don't need to do anything. Maybe they already are way ahead of everybody. But Michael Kopech, you do need to slow play him into stardom. And he's on his way. If he's not, he's well on his way. It's just a matter of how you handle his usage now. And I think that less now will be more later, and that's the key.
I mean, what a dilemma to have if you're the White Sox, if that's what the word we're going to use is a dilemma. He's been doing really well. And it's kind of sort of like the Alec Mills, Zach Davies question. Like, if you were to put Kopech in the starting rotation now, it would be in place of who? And could that pitcher do what Kopech's been doing for them so far in a bullpen? We don't know the answer to that question. Here's what we don't know, is if the Sox starting staff can't stay completely healthy for an extended period of time, is that when the Sox would make the move to Kopech being one of the starting five? That's the question. He's good enough right now that he doesn't have to be. The roster is good enough right now where he doesn't have to be. I know I predicted and said I wanted, but that was the fan of Michael Kopech in me. I just get in front of the television and I watch this, believe it or not, I watch this guy throw. He's really fun to watch. When he's coming out of the bullpen, obviously you don't know when that's going to be. With social media and stuff, you get an alert and you find out that he's coming into the game, and then you get in front of the television. So it's a great problem for the Sox to have. Of course it makes more sense to preserve his arm. I like, Mully, I like your idea of a Kopech crochet postseason start. That sounds fantastic. We'll find out, but this is a good problem. This isn't a bad problem.
Yeah, you know, I definitely get that question.
What is your thought on the Odyssey mock draft released yesterday that had the Bears moving up two spots in the first round to take Virginia Tech offensive tackle Christian Darrisaw? If you don't want the Bears to trade up for a quarterback, are you okay with them moving up for another position?
Well, I've got a lot of time for the Odyssey mock draft. I think they contacted the right experts, and I think they got the right information there. So I think it's definitely recommended reading for everybody. I don't like the idea of the Bears moving up, though, for anybody. I think that you want to protect your assets. You don't want to squander them. Again, it's a matter of trust. And we'll hear from Ryan Pace later today, but don't expect to hear anything that leading to make you think he's willing to do that, to move up. But I will say this, if you're talking about moving up a couple spots and you're not going to lose the volume of picks, you just may be positioning, I could understand why you would do that, and I would be more in favor of doing that if the result were an offensive tackle or a cornerback. I would be less inclined to believe that or want that or understand it if it were a wide receiver. See, I think the cornerback and offensive tackle, to me, and we'll get into, I can't wait for a draft breakdown at 7:20 when we do break down offensive linemen. But I do think that those two positions, offensive tackle and cornerback, are more pressing need positions. And they also have some players at that spot in 20. And if you move up a couple spots, you could justify doing that. But they have got some really good players there that you could draft them, sign or draft them, introduce them, and call it a night and feel very good about what you just did. Because a first-round draft pick, if he looks like a week one starter, that is a good draft. So at least for the first round. And I think that I would understand it if you wanted to move up. I would recommend staying put because at 20, you will be able to get, that's sort of the no man's land of the draft, but it's also a place where there's less pressure to find the superstar, but you could find a starter. You could find a reliable player. You could find somebody who's consistent, and really the Bears need all of that and more. And Ryan Pace cannot miss on this draft pick. So I would say, okay, yeah, maybe, but I would stand pat. I would stay in place.
You know, I got to tell you, this is a real problem, really a big problem for me. Okay, if there's like Quentin Nelson there at 18 and you're moving for him, hey, move all day, right? I mean, right. If you can get that kind of a talent, I'm not sure that Darrisaw would be that guy. I think that there are some real good players in this draft, and I'm not sure that he would be that guy. Let's say, I mean, I'm just trying to think of a player that could fall to that spot that you'd want to grab before he goes somewhere else. I mean, a left tackle is obviously a player that you would need on this team and you would want to start addressing. And
Micah Parsons.
Taking one in 10 years. That's an interesting idea.
See,
so That's what I'm saying, David. I mean, the problem is, here's the problem, in a nutshell. It hasn't worked, right? It didn't
that's
work
it.
With Mitch.
That's,
didn't
that's
work
it.
With Leonard Floyd. We've seen examples of the one-eye draft not working, where you just everything kind of zooms in and you're totally focused on a guy and you make the move and it doesn't work. So it is hard for me to be a proponent of something that I've seen not work with this guy. And that is, I mean, again, I don't know why it hasn't worked. I don't know how he's followed it up as repeatedly as he has. But that makes me less inclined. There's a part of me that wants this guy, just let the draft come to you. Let the draft come to you. But I see a player who I think, like, hey, that guy could be around for a very long time and it could be a really good player. Go get him. And that's not kind of what I really want in my heart. So I think there's a huge gap between wanting the Bears to go after a guy and appreciating Ryan Pace doing it. That's
Did you
part
call
of the
it
problem.
The one-eyed draft? The one-eyed
yeah,
drafter?
That's what he is.
Like no. with an eye patch and like.
It's arg, like imagine arg. He's like Fernando Tatis Jr. rounding second, but with no talent.
I moved up.
It's an Australian term. You get one-eyed about something. You just zero in on one.
I was thinking pirate.
Yeah. Arr, matey.
I don't like this idea at all. Not even a little tiny bit. There seems like this is really, unless you really are in desperate need of a guy, meaning a team that is kind of playoff bound year in and year out, that's drafting somewhere between 25 and 32. Maybe there's a fourth offense. This seems like a three offensive lineman, no doubt about it, first round guys. You got your two tackles, and then you've got the kid out of USC who's projected as a guard but probably could play right tackle. I mean, if anything, you could talk me into that, but you draft an offensive lineman if you think you're going to be around for a couple more years. And I don't know, and we don't know. If somebody knows, please tell me. Are Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy guaranteed to be here beyond next year? I know if we talk to the 49ers stud head football coach, we don't know if we're going to be here on Thursday, right? I mean, you know, nobody can predict anything. You don't know when you're going to be here. But that being said, okay, you got to get – I think you got to get a ball catcher. I think you got to get somebody who's going to be a toy, per se, on offense. And that means wide receiver. I think you have to take, you sit at 20. Maybe somebody wants to come up. Maybe somebody wants to come up and dance, and you can move back and get another asset. Either take the, in my opinion, you take the best wide receiver or the best cornerback. It's one of those two positions because that can help you on offense, and you need another. You need another DB. You need another cornerback because basically you start three every single game. Unless they are going to be here beyond next year, you can't draft an offensive line and you can't trade up for an offensive line.
I'm sorry, I have a question for you.
Were we too quick Monday to write off the Bulls who found a way to beat the Heat in Miami without Zach LaVine and Troy Brown? What was a bigger deal, Daniel Tice coming up big with a double-double or Kobe White shaking off a slow start to finish strong?
I got to tell you, I don't think we gave up on him. I think that we talked about the difference between the Blackhawks and the Bulls. And we talked about the Bulls kind of, it wasn't time. You know, it's a five-man game. You don't go to other players. You know, the Blackhawks, we talked about getting young guys going and all that because their chances seemed dashed. But I think we still gave the Bulls a chance, or we still were on board with trying, even after they lost the game to Miami. I think you have no choice in the NBA. I don't think it's a developmental league in any way, and I don't think there are players that you want to develop. But Kobe White is the more important player. And Kobe White right now doing some of that that pick-and-pop stuff with Vooch was very important for them to win that game. And I think that that Kobe White is a part of the future and is a key element to fill in with Zach LaVine out. You need his shooting. You need his ability. I think that Daniel Tice is giving you the same game pretty much all the way around. I love what he's doing, and I love that he's a rim protector and he's going to break his rear end. But I don't think that I don't think that I really don't think that White is, there's any way of underplaying how important he is for this team. You know, Troy Brown is a good defensive presence for them too. So it was important that they guarded the perimeter. Kobe White's a really key piece of this thing, and I'm not saying that Daniel Theis isn't. I think that he can be a good player moving forward, but he's not in that role that Kobe White is in. So I would say he's the more important player. And again, I think we're expecting the Bulls to be battling till the end of the year. Maybe we're not on board with them getting in. Maybe we think they've blown their opportunity, and we've talked about that. But I think they've got to keep biting at that apple.
Yeah, because I think now instead of 10 to 12 games against playoff teams, now it's 9 of 11. And so right. the road gets no easier. You just were able to clear the first hurdle successfully. And they did it in a way you didn't expect. I didn't expect. I mean, they out-rebounded the Heat. They won the game on the glass, 51-34. And a lot of that was because of the jumbo lineup they incorporated. And you saw Vooch and you saw Daniel Theis with both double-doubles. Both guys had more than 20 points and more than double-digit 12 rebounds. Theis with 23-12. This could be the Daniel Theis game if his tenure is a short one in Chicago. And if he keeps playing like this, it will be, because he's a UFA. He's an unrestricted free agent. And he will have suitors. He will have bidders. And I think if he's an unrestricted free agent, as much as you might like to see him play alongside Vooch in the future, or provide this defensive presence coming off the bench, if that's his role, it's going to be expensive to keep him in town. So with that in mind, that's all the context for why, as good of a game as it was for Daniel Theis, and it may go down as the Daniel Theis game, Kobe White's continued evolution or progress, every game that he does something that signifies a mini step forward or in the right direction is significant, and more significant for a guy who has to be part of your core moving forward if you want to be the kind of team that you think you can become. Now, you're missing a point guard. That's not Kobe White. You're going to have Zach. You're going to have Vooch. But Kobe White can still be part of your core as either maybe he is your sixth man and he's coming off the bench, but that's a very important part to play. So I think that of the two, Kobe White last night, finding his rhythm, not remembering his misses, and having that sort of perseverance that Billy Donovan has alluded to more than once, that to me was as big of a takeaway as anything.
I mean, Troy Brown's name being put into the question is what kind of took me off the highway. But yes, that win last night and Kobe White doing what he did, that was important. I mean, Troy Brown is just, he's awful. That guy.
He can D it up.
That's a whole other story.
He can play D.
No, he can't. I'm sorry. Okay. I watched that. A couple of games that they lost that they shouldn't have lost. Guy doesn't know how to box out. The guy doesn't know how to jump. He doesn't do the. He's here to do the little things, and he has no idea how to do the little things. Bottom line is that win last night makes Wednesday night's game against the Knicks very watchable, and a game that you're going to want to tune in to see, because as you guys pointed out earlier in the show, Thibs is going to coach that game like it's game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, and can the Bulls match that? Okay, shorthanded Heat. There was shorthanded Bulls last night. Bulls came up on top. They are in a do-or-die situation at this point every night, so we're going to see how they really feel. Bottom line, to answer the question quickly, we're running late. The game on Wednesday is now watchable because of the fact that they won last night.
All right, 312-644-6767. There are a lot of things we got to get to. Can we get back to the Michael Kopech thing, David? I really want to make a point about some of the comparisons that I've seen made to him that are driving me either crazy or that I'm a little confounded by.
Okay, good. Let's do that.
We'll get to that. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.